My name is Jeff Schwartz. I'm a consultant at Altus Group, and I graduated in 2016 from the master's program.
And my name is Emma Bermutz. I am a senior project manager at ERA Architects, and I also graduated in 2016 from the master planning program at TMU.
And they're married! Happy Planner Valentine's Day, Planorama Podcast. To celebrate the occasion, I'm sitting down with three planning power couples to talk about that all-important ingredient of city building, love. Happy listening and happy planning. Hello, Emma Abramowitz and Jeffrey Schwartz. It's a pleasure to have you on for our inaugural Valentine's Day Planning Power Couples episode of Planorama. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much.
Very Neil. Exciting.
So what's your relationship?
What's I'm our kidding. Relationship?
We're married.
You are both married for over a year now. And while you are one of three couples on this episode, you are one that I have unique familiarity with because I saw it all happen from the very beginning at SERP. Because we were classmates together from 2014 to 2016.
I think that I should say at this point that at the start of our program, there were, 36 people in our program. And we walked into the program and I could tell that, it was a good group vibe. And it seemed like, there'd be, really great group hangouts and, great groups of friends emerging from it. And I specifically said to a bunch of people at the start of the program, there's one rule here, nobody can date. Because it'll be drama, it'll be middle school. No one in this program can date. I had been in a 36-person middle school class and everyone dated. And I said, just no one's gonna date in this program.
And I'm always up for a challenge. And that's that.
Yeah, so what happened? That's a pretty strict rule, Emma.
I just-
Took about 3 months? Took about 3 months.
I don't know, this guy emerged, we became best friends, and then we fell in love.
Well, we didn't fall in love right away.
Well, I will say that I do remember Jeff helping me study for exams in the first semester, and helping me out a few holes when I was kind of panicked about some assignments. And he was just generally there for me.
Even though you got better marks than me, I was always less panicked and more organized. And somehow that worked out worse for me being more organized.
No, I just feel like that's a reliable picture of, or an accurate picture of us, which is that you're reliable.
And I think it worked out all right in the end anyway. Hey, Jeff?
So far, so good, Neil.
Okay, so here you are. It's Valentine's Day. The question we're all wondering, what made you fall in love with planning in the first place?
With planning?
In high school, I always wanted to go downtown after school and just get a sandwich or whatever and just walk around. And I was always just interested in being where other people were and just experiencing the city in a more intense way than just the suburbs. And I guess it first kind of started with being interested in highways. And tall buildings, and that obviously evolved as I went to school and kind of learned more and more about how this stuff works.
I'm actually really similar. In that there were things that drew me to cities, but my interest in cities really changed. Also highways, big freeways, the concrete jungle kind of thing with big highway off ramps. And then when I was a teenager, I was really into Dubai and the big buildings in Dubai. And I thought that was really cool. Whereas now my interests do not include highways. I may actively oppose them. And Dubai urbanism isn't exactly the kind of city that I support in my work. But those things kind of brought me to, they were just kind of exciting urbanist things. And then your values change over time.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. Back when I was 17, you could plot me down at the base of the tallest building in the city and I'd just stand there and find it really cool to look up and not realize that the more important thing was what you saw when you looked horizontally.
On my end, I have loved history and historic building fabric forever. And I sort of knew kind of vaguely in my mind that really I should be going into a job in affordable housing because that was the really important stuff to be doing. But I really, really wanted to be working with heritage buildings. And I chose to go to planning school basically so that I wouldn't have to choose, because planning school could take me in the direction of affordable housing, which I should be doing one day, or heritage. And here I am working in heritage. Every so often I get to work on projects where the two intersect, and that's the best part. But I guess I found my way to my true love.
Jeff. Or yeah. You mean
I
heritage.
Found Jeff. I went to planning school for a field that I didn't end up in, and then I found Jeff at planning school.
Tell me about your connection to the planning community and how you've stayed connected since graduating.
I think we're really, really, really lucky that we were at school with a remarkable and cool group of people. And it was a group of people that sort of made an effort to kind of come and spend time together right from the start. There were a number of people, including you, Jeff, and including you, Neil, who were from out of town and from kind of across the country, a bunch of people from BC, a few people from Alberta. Neil, you're from Manitoba. And so there was that kind of core crew of people who didn't really know anyone in the city. And then there were a few of us like me, I'm from Toronto, who were kind of just eager to make friends with this new group of people we were spending all our time with. And it was so fun right from the beginning. And, you know, today we do things like sometimes we go to cottages together, and it's really special. Like, you know, Neil, you were in our wedding, and that's really special to us. And I mean, it's special to me. You can speak for yourself, because we are each
Jeff,
individual.
Is it special?
It was special, Neil.
I thought so too.
No, but I think Emma's right. The people that you meet in your program are your network, and they will all inevitably end up working or being professionals in a very wide range of different fields and different cities and potentially different countries. You know, it's really fun to be able to go to several different cities in the country and always have a contact or a connection there. And it's a really important group of people that are always kind of on your team in a sense, and growing professionally with you too.
Right. And I think what's so interesting about what you said, the point you made about like, we all end up in different fields, like when you're in, particularly when you're in an interdisciplinary planning program and everybody ends up in kind of different niche aspects of our field, that then because of the nature of our work, and I guess maybe I'm particularly talking about the consulting side of our work, we all end up on projects that are kind of overlapping or sometimes working together, where we're just bringing a different place, like a different piece of planning to that project. So like, I mean, you and I have never actually worked on a project directly together, but our offices have, our teams have, and sometimes we're on the same projects, but we're coming in at different stages of them. And that's a really fun way to go about kind of working in this field, to have people like to be able to talk to you about these projects coming. I mean, we should probably specify also, you know, I come at these projects from like a heritage lens. I'm the heritage consultant on these. Jeff is doing kind of real estate economics on these. So we are in two very separate niches of this field, but our projects often need both of us and a bunch of other people.
Do you want to talk about how different your fields of planning are, and maybe if you have through that learned a little bit about each other's different planning interests?
Yeah, so I do like kind of real estate economics. Like I work with the numbers side of real estate, like demographic forecasting, population, like retail and office market kind of demand, which obviously is very different than heritage preservation. But yeah, I mean, I think that we both work on the consulting side, helping either, you know, private developers, clients, kind of understand what
their
asset is,
of their project,
understand what their asset is, or understand kind of, yeah, the scale of what they can or cannot do, or what makes sense. And we both come at it from two different angles, and there are other angles that provide those parameters that ultimately shape a project. So we're just two of those kind of components. And on some projects, you know, it's more much more of a heritage focus, and on other projects it's much more of kind of a numbers focus, and we sub in and out, I guess, depending on the project. So there is definitely overlap, but there's also on many projects, you know, Emma would be working on something that I'd never seen.
But I also think that our two fields are very niche. Like I think Neil, you work more in kind of a more standard land use planning role, whereas we've gone into kind of niche aspects of this field that are very different from each other. And like, you know, I basically have no idea what you actually do. I think you have a little more of an idea of what I actually do because I force you to listen to me talk about work more often. But it's really a totally foreign field to me. So we're able to kind of talk about surface level stuff. Like we understand kind of you know, the development dynamics going on in cities across Canada that we work in. We can talk about big projects that we both know about just from being in this field, but we also are not kind of involved in the nitty-gritty of our day-to-day work lives together, and that's kind of nice, I think. It's nice to have a bit of that distance.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, interesting, because you do have such very different fields within planning that you're working in. I can't decide if it makes you more of a planning power couple or not,
There's
but
a sweet spot. There's a sweet spot where our two works can come together, and it's in kind of like culture-driven economic development, which is something that we think about a lot on my team at work, like particularly in rural places. And there was one time that we partnered together for an RFP, didn't work out, but we had a brief moment of maybe getting to work together, or like the dream of getting to work together and actually pair our two skills.
how sweet would that be? Do you think that it, like along the same lines, you know, couples grow together over time? Do you think that you have influenced each other's professional planning opinion?
Question.
I will admit, like, heritage was not a priority of mine, and I've come to appreciate and, you know, I value what it brings to a city beyond just being a barrier to density. So I you know, it has given me, I think, our relationship and you know, day-to-day interactions about these have given me an appreciation that, you know, there is value in an interest in maintaining heritage buildings. And
Can I elaborate on that for a second? I think that my area of interest has broadened your personal opinion. I think yours has broadened my professional opinion. Like you were sort of saying from the start of our planning program, you were one of the people, maybe this is an Albertan thing, but you're one of the people who was saying, like, we have to care about the economics of these projects. Like you, like all these students are proposing pie in the sky projects. And like you were bringing a level of pragmatism, and like you were talking about pro formas and the understanding that like all of these numbers have to work. And that was just not, you know, I have a Bachelor of Arts undergrad. Like that wasn't the lens that I was bringing to my kind of approach to planning. And I think it's not a lens that a lot of people bring to their approach to planning school. And so I think you have shifted my kind of professional perspective on this, along with, you know, also working in the real world. But I think that the way that you talk about places, and the way that you kind of value historic built fabric is like, it almost bears out. It seems like it bears out more in like our personal lives, like the types of places that we want to live, for example. Does that seem fair?
yeah, I mean, forget the types of places that a lot of people want to live are the places that have old buildings in them. And a lot of people want to live in new buildings next to old buildings. But you need the old buildings there to create the interesting streetscape and the interesting businesses that are able to, you know, survive on lower rents and draw people to the community. It's an interesting dynamic.
I
I
this
mean,
is
that's
it. This is the Venn diagram,
yeah.
heritage and market economic planning.
Yep.
Totally. Yes, 100%.
Has there ever been a crossover where, say, Jeff demonstrated an interest and appreciation for heritage that maybe made you fall in love with him, Emma?
I feel like I'm being set up for this question. So, Jeff, was it before or after you developed your kind of personal and professional appreciation for heritage that you took me on a walk through the Madison Avenue, West Annex Phase One Heritage Conservation District while you were trying to woo me?
I had no appreciation for heritage, but I really like walking.
I thought you were gonna say you really like me.
I had appreciation for you is what he meant to say.
I really like
my walking. One true love is walking. And so I was able to combine walking with a person that I found very interesting and a place that I felt would pique her interest. And it just happened to be in a heritage conservation district that I really knew nothing about.
I mean, it was on your way home.
It was on my way home, but I really knew nothing about it. And yeah, had nice trees and some nice old buildings.
Those are attributes, I think.
Those are heritage attributes of the district. I remember you took me through that walk there intentionally, and I thought it was the nicest, most thoughtful thing that anyone had ever done for me, because you cared about what I was interested in, you know.
Aww. And so then in what ways, Emma, have you shown an appreciation for say commercial retail?
For numbers. For Excel spreadsheets. I do love an Excel spreadsheet, but mostly I use them for lists and color coding, not for
Emma
the
filters
actual
spreadsheets with words.
Doesn't really count as a spreadsheet. How have I found an appreciation for numbers? I like that it makes you happy. I like that it interests you.
Aww.
Does it make you happy?
Sometimes. And it works out really nicely, yes.
Perfect.
When the numbers add up. Do you two try to keep work and life separate or not? Like, how much do you talk about planning and your job at the end of the day?
We talk about... Yeah, I mean, like, it is our profession, but it's also an interest. So it's, you know, I wouldn't say we're talking about work for work's sake. We're talking about it because it's interesting or it's frustrating or there's some news to share. So it's a combination of all of those.
I agree with that completely. I think that, I mean, I had a colleague and friend at work at one point who told me that she never talks to her mom about her work. Like when she calls her mom, she never talks to her mom about her work because she just doesn't want to think about her work. And I thought to myself, and like, I grew up in a house where my parents came home and they told us about their day and they told us about the interesting things they had done. And so we come home and we talk about our day. And the idea that, I mean, that's like a separate thing. That's a relationship thing that we wouldn't like talk to each other about what we had done that day. And like the interactions we'd had with our colleagues and our clients and things like that is weird to me. But I also think that like, as a separate thing, this is our interest. It's something that we have in common. We're interested in places. We're interested in the way that the city around us is changing. Like there's a development application for a 16-story tower in our new neighborhood that we just moved to that just got approved. And our neighbors are up in arms. And like the idea of, you know, like we are now kind of permanent residents of this neighborhood. And our perspective on that as residents, and this is our main street, and like having the opportunity to grapple with like potentially being NIMBYs for the first time in our lives, it's like interesting to us.
Speaking of that building, did you know that they got their approvals and then there was a fire the next day?
Why do the fire the next day? Why not just do the fire before the approvals?
Well, I don't know if I can say this on a podcast, but the reason that a fire might happen the next day is that insurance has to then cover demolition of your building, and so you don't actually have to pay for demolition, but we're not going to include that piece in the podcast.
See, Emma, Jeff knows how numbers work.
Because yeah, that is how numbers work. We have said nothing to indicate what city we're living in or what neighborhood we're living in, so I mean, you can all date this. Anybody who's an urbanist who's listening to this podcast tomorrow.
Are you calling out my listeners?
you can go look into this.
Okay, so it's Valentine's Day, the annual celebration of love. How do we bring more love into our cities?
Make them more whimsical. Make them funner places to be, a little bit slower. You know, your experience in a place like Toronto is walk fast, move fast, or get out of the way. And I think that creating spaces where people can kind of stop and interact with their surroundings, or talk to people without feeling like they're in the way, is maybe a way you can add a little bit more love into the city.
Can you talk about how that intersects? I'm sure it's not on a daily basis, Jeff, but with the work that you do, just like what the connection would be.
People who linger more spend more money, quite frankly. And people want to be in interesting places where there's lots of other people. Offices cluster in places where there's other offices, and we're living in an environment where employers are trying to entice employees back to the office. And the way they're going to do that is by locating in interesting and convenient to access places that are rich with amenities.
So as a planner working in commercial real estate, that's a dynamic that you're seeing right now.
It's definitely top of mind, is how do we get people back into an office? And the answer to that is,
love.
Different offices have different approaches, but got to be transit accessible, got to be close to interesting things, got to be close to your colleagues, because it's very hard to convince somebody to, you know, spend $4 or $50 or whatever it's going to cost to commute from Oshawa or something, spend 2 hours of their day to get downtown, to interact with nobody, to sit in a cubicle all day, and then hop back on the GO train to go back to the middle of, to Oshawa. And instead, if you've given people a reason to hang out afterwards, to go for a drink, or to, if your office space is very interesting and engaging and a light, bright place to work, and you're collaborating with your, other people, it's an easier sell to get people back into the office. And people in the office spend money on lunch and coffee, and that creates vibrancy.
It strikes me right now, it sounds like such an important issue, obviously, right? Like these third spaces, an excellent public realm, places for people to gather and meet. And thinking about this at a time when it's a housing crisis, and that's like the number one issue. And transit systems around the country are in need of significant investment, where we don't know where that money's going to come from. And the office market is facing one of its most serious threats in decades right now, that the idea of whimsy and quality public spaces and the physical environment that people enjoy could easily fall to the wayside. Do you have either of you a way to justify investment and care into that?
I mean, I think Jeff made the point. If you make good places to be, people are going to spend more money and it boosts the economy. Like that's the, if you're asking how to justify it, then I feel like that's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of changes. I am of the opinion, and people will want flexibility. The idea of having kind of a central core that you go to work in, and that's the only thing you do in, and then you leave it, can't be sustainable. It 5 days a week, it made sense for the businesses to operate there. But when a significant amount of those people are going in maybe 3 days a week, it's hard for businesses to make a go of it. And so I think you're going to see, it's not going to happen, it's going to be a long process, but you're going to see conversion, the removal of office space, whether through demolition or conversion into other uses. You're going to see more and more people kind of living in those areas to create more vibrancy. And the offices that will remain will become kind of much more employee focused and amenitized to create an environment that people want to be in. And that needs to not only be in the, on the 33rd floor, wherever your office is, but, you'll see a cafe in the lobby where you'll meet your clients, and you'll see, in the summer, it'll be a nice engaging kind of plaza or whatever that kind of bleeds out onto the street, and just a more interesting and engaging kind of, with a patio maybe that spills out onto, God forbid in Toronto, a roadway and takes a lane of traffic. That's the way that, like, it'll be a long process, but I think that's kind of the way that it requires private investment, but also the public sector needs to be on board and needs to be kind of facilitating partners in that.
Speaking of the public sector, I think that the way that we can bring more love to our cities is by making them more compassionate and humane for the most vulnerable people who live in them. We have seen since kind of the advent of COVID, like the rise of communities of people living in parks and kind of spaces throughout our cities. And there, I would say that there has not been a particularly compassionate response to that type of condition from many, many people and people who live in our cities, political leadership. And I think that we can, you know, obviously these are major challenges that are happening all across North America. But I think that we can do better, and we can kind of prioritize a level of compassion and humanity as opposed to kind of responding to the needs and requests of the kind of most established and stable residents of our neighborhoods.
I did send in advance a link to planninglove.org.
I did see that. Oh. I've seen that website before. Like it's
yeah. And if interested, I would love each of you to select a Valentine to give to the other.
Ooh, these are beautiful.
Oh, I've seen these.
Okay, so you want us to choose one right now?
Yeah.
Okay. On the freeway between our hearts, there is no off-ramp.
Everyone loves that one, but I'm like, it's so car oriented. Like,
will you be my prime consultant?
That needs it.
You induced a man within my
Jesus
pants.
Christ, Neil.
We're not choosing that one. Can we try three in the HOV?
Excuse me, these are like. Can I pop up your parklet?
My oh my.
How about my heart is a chupista? There's always a spot for you.
Oh, Emma, do you understand that one?
Feels a little obscure. No, mine is you are the architect of my life.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay, do you have
one? I already said mine.
What is it? The chupista one?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
I love it. No one else said that one, so that's perfect. There's only so many
that's
on here.
That's why I chose it. Because everyone's going to be like, ooh, I don't understand that one.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, then you should read more books, including the 700-page book that he wrote.
Okay. Emma and Jeff, thank you so much for coming on to the Planorama podcast, for sharing a little bit about the work you do, and for being a bona fide planning power couple.
Thank you, Neil. We appreciate getting to spend this time together and all the other time that you have spent with us as a couple, both in the planning world and just as our friend.
Aw. Thank you for joining us today for this lovely, love-filled Valentine's episode of Planorama. If you want to make my planner Valentine's Day a success, all you have to do is hit that subscribe button and stay tuned for our next episode. If you have a planning story to share or know someone who should come on the Planorama podcast, please reach out. Reach me on Twitter or LinkedIn at Neil Lowen, NEIL LOEWEN, or any of our SERPA at TMU accounts. Happy listening and happy planning.